From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
Good morning and welcome to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. And Sunday morning means Loose on the Lead live from Clare Court in Saratoga. Another beautiful Saratoga morning. And we are joined, as always, by my co-host, Steve Bick.
Good morning. Not always.
We are always here in spirit.
That's so thoughtful. Thank you.
You're right. It isn't always.
No, it's but regularly.
Yes, yes.
Regularly.
Most of the time. Looking sharp today, but I caught you in the paddock yesterday. And I think the I think the guys have a shot here. You talk about looking sharp in the seersucker yesterday. Not only the seersucker, but I will tell people, check out the shoes as well. This was some quite some outfit yesterday in the paddock here. It's that is sharp.
Oh, you got me with the lean back too.
That
you got me with
sharp.
The hey now.
That's the model pose, one foot in front of the other.
Really?
Yeah.
I did that actually without, I didn't realize that. Nobody instructed me. I tracked this out once a summer.
Yeah, it was looking good.
It's, you know, they said it was going to be 90 again yesterday after a cool week. And so I said, this is my last shot. Whitney is usually my choice for pulling this outfit out.
The seersucker suit. Good job.
Can't beat it. It's so light. The light and breezy.
And as I say, the shoes were also very
those good. I trot those out once a year.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you.
Yesterday, attendance announced 39,127. I was downtown last night for a little bit because I ate at Hattie's and walked around, and it was rocking post-races, too. I came back. My car was parked out here, and so we're right across the street from the Horseshoe, and after the races, I walked back, got my car, and that line out of the Horseshoe, and the whole place was rocking yesterday.
I admire you. My days of, you know, that
well
carousing.
Somebody said to me the other day, stopping the train, said, man, I got to ask you, you're handicapping every day, you're on TV, and you're out at night and everything, and I said, there's not so much out at night anymore. That is But I did eat at Hattie's, like chicken and waffles. Very good.
Well, speaking of that, we're going to have later in the show, Travis Stone is joining us. I don't know how much of a cook Travis is. I know he likes to eat, but Wayne Catalano. You're going to want to bring out your cookbook notes, and because Catalano has become, I don't know if he rivals the girl sack shoes. She's I've never seen anything like it. She literally makes a dinner and gets 1,500 likes for a plate of food. It's a little crazy, but Catman is big. He's right there.
Yeah.
Him and Mig too.
I had Meg on yesterday, and the TRF barbecue coming up
Tuesday.
They're going to offer a silent auction item. Meg is going to prepare
dinner. Come to your house.
He come to his house and he cooks.
Go to his house.
He cooks for, or maybe he comes to your house. I don't know where he's going.
Doesn't make much sense.
He's cooking for up to eight.
Wow.
He's cooking for up to eight. That's a silent auction.
That'll be a hit. If you want to go to TRFinc.org. To check, they may be sold out.
So they're sold out.
They are sold out.
But Kim was here yesterday and talking about the before Mig went on, and she said, but they are allowing proxy bids on the silent auction. So if you know somebody who has a ticket and is going, you can have them put in a bid for you.
Interesting. All right. Well, by the way, I got to after last week saying that you needed to be wearing the gray button down, which I knew you owned. I'm very impressed that you pulled it out. That's one of my old favorite ties as well. That is a Sacco tie. But you sewed it all together today, Slappy.
Boom.
I'm very impressed.
Pen drop. I try. I come in, I try. And then I hear it all day. People like, I love your tie today. Hey, you know. All right, let's go back to yesterday, and we'll watch some of the action. Pulled up the entire race yesterday from the Alabama, and just a tour de force from Neston here. 99 buyer figure. Irad Ortiz on board, gets it done. You know, top of the stretch, there was a little bit of a challenge from Secret Oath. That one got close, but that's at the point Irad said with Ness, let's go, and she goes. It was a perfectly good rebound effort for Secret Oath. Ran well, but no better than second behind the monster that is Ness now. Goddess of Fire, the other Pleasure Horse, runs third. We talked about it earlier on the handicapping show, and I said right after this race, I was in the winner's circle, and I was saying to people, I you have to think she showed up the three-year-old Eclipse. I did think later on, I don't know how likely it is, but if these horses both showed up in the distaff and Secret Oath won that, I think there would be an interesting conversation.
Wow.
At this point.
Yeah.
But with the the grade ones under her belt and adding the Alabama yesterday, Nest at the currently clearly at the top of the division.
This is exactly what you wanted to see from her under this circumstance. You know, people asked quite a bit leading up to yesterday, can she lose? Can she be beat? I thought if there was a scenario that could trip her up, it might have been Gerrymander, getting
well
on the lead and somehow, just nursing them to sleep on the front end. I was a little surprised that Gerrymander was back where she was, but I thought there were two schools of thought from a Fig perspective, sheet methodology. There was some thoughts that maybe Nest would regress off of her career top in the Oaks. Instead, she even takes another step forward. So this was a horse. When you look at that breeding, Medaglia d'Oro out of the AP Indy mare. It just absolutely designed for this trip. I mean, she literally was born for this race, and the time was not, particularly from a stopwatch standpoint, 1:02:03 and change, but 99 buyer,
which was a little bit of a regression from the 104. In the
exactly. But I mean, look at her. I mean, she's geared down, and this is a really, really talented. Philly, and there's more to look forward to. And she is going to acquit herself. I think you mentioned the distaff. She has every tool to, be a factor. We'll look to things like the Cotillion, obviously, and for the older fillies and mares, the Spinster. One race, which speaking of this topic, we're not going to probably look at the race, but leader of the band, winning that Summer Colony. On Friday for Will Schwartz and John Service. John Service had not won here in ages. Do you see the numbers that Dave Grenick came up with? Crazy. He was 0 for his last 24, I think, Service, since Jostle. Jostle was his last winner at Saratoga, which shocked me. Anyway, happy for our friend Will Schwartz, who we go to Eagle games with. And we'll be back actually this week with Johnny D. Leader of the band is shouldering her way into conversation, trying to break from the second tier filly and mares into the top tier. So the filly and mare side of the equation, the boys have already done what they need to do in terms of establishing, a high level of anticipation toward the fall and toward Breeders' Cup Classic. But now I think the fillies and mares, they're shaping up beautifully. This was a great performance, and congratulations to Aaron Wellman. Tried to get Aaron on TV, but he was flying back to California at 8:30 this morning.
Two people in the winner's circle yesterday.
Yeah, there's only 90 or 100.
They get filing out of the clubhouse. Todd said after, just what you alluded to, the mile and a quarter hit her square between the eyes, and he said he was a little concerned with the break, but then got into stride, and just a really big performance from Ness. One race earlier, Caravelle in the Smart and Fancy gets it done, coming back off a disappointing performance, obviously, with some trouble in the Caress. So it's going to be number 9 Caravelle. But I had Michelle Lovell on. I know you're friends with Michelle.
Yeah.
Her change of control, and I talked to her after the race, and she said, man, with our trip, it's going to be the number 1 horse. I said to her, you got to be proud. She said she was. I'm thrilled with the performance, but she says, with the trip, I might have been best in here. That see a change of control coming late there. So nice performance, really, by both the top two.
Well, Caravelle's a horse. Personally, I can't seem to get Caravelle right of late. You know, there's all kinds of class about her. Brad Cox has sort of rebuilt her a little bit. But I agree, change of control. Change of control's scenario was kind of doomed by that draw. She's a mare that likes to be outside of horses. And in fact, Clocker John Nichols, he and I were talking, I think on Thursday or Friday. And he said, I'm worried about, we were trying to put together, you know, a kind of an elite approach with Nest, more or less, you know, feeling like a single. We were trying to fashion a ticket that would combine the Lake Placid, you know, the late pick 4, the late pick 5. And John alerted, you know, me to that. He said, you know, he goes, I don't like her down inside of horses. And that kind of doomed her. But she ran great.
Yeah, it was a great run late to just miss
her. Yeah.
And finally, in the Lake Placid.
It's a copy for you.
I was going to say seldom. I almost never play the pick 6. And yesterday, I put a $9 ticket together. I just didn't let. I couldn't pull the trigger on Haughty.
Haughty. Like, yeah, you went 5 for 6.
Went 5 for 6.
Look at you.
Yeah, it's just with
good
a $9 ticket.
Good for you.
And it just looked like one of those days where maybe you could do something like that. So I got $22 back, but the 6 was $1,500, and part of that I think was Haughty. With the Moonlight, had some trouble at the start, or might have been best in here. And I thought, as we watched the stretch run, with the Moonlight's the number 1. I thought she had the momentum, and I was gonna get it done. But just as she gets up to Haughty, I think Haughty then says, oh, you're not going by me.
No.
And she holds on, particularly with those early fractions. She just had enough left. So Haughty in a minor upset at $13 and change in the Lake Placid.
There were some people that were talking leading up to this race. They loved her in here for the pace scenario. Yeah. I wasn't as convinced. I think I picked her 3rd. I tried to get Louis Lazzanero's filly moved up a little bit. Eminent Victor, I thought, was the one with upside and with price value equation. But Haughty, this is a big win for her. And, you know, it's just one of those scenarios where when you have a shortish field, I mean, it wasn't that short. You just, if you don't have any pace pressure, this just...
Yeah,
no, it just happens over and over again.
I knew I was doomed on the backstretch with the
fractions.
Yeah. And finally, wanted to show one more from tomorrow. We'll also play one from Del Mar coming up, but I wanted to show one more from tomorrow, from yesterday, because, man, this 7th race yesterday with
Echo Again
was just, boy, this was some performance. So we're going to take a look. Maiden Special, there was clearly some buzz out on the horse as Echo Again went off the 3-5 favorite. A 94 buyer. That's solid for a 2-year-old.
Solid.
In August. Yeah.
Spectacular.
Yeah, absolutely.
Solid for a 3-year-old.
Echo Again here, the number 5 horse. A son of Gunrunner, but maybe more importantly for me, the dam produced a sibling, Pneumatic, that won in the first couple for Asmussen. And so there was some absolute breeding here. And again, the buzz, obviously, with the price. And boy, this horse lives up to a chart margin just under 9 lengths, that 94 buyer. I was in the winner's circle afterwards. Steve Asmussen said his son had been working this horse the best he has been on, the son said, who is obviously a young guy and maybe doesn't have the big resume, but the best he's been on. But he said Ricardo Santana got off the horse and said, you know what, he's faster than his father. So it was a performance that looked good, and it's going to be worth watching Echo Again going forward.
Well, this is a scary effort, and what is the most just remarkable part of the Ron Winchell juggernaut, the Tappet mares, and in fact somebody on Twitter, I believe, I think it was on Twitter, might have been Alan Carasso from TDN. I'll dig it up. Has a stat. 8 of the 35 Gunrunner winners are out of Tappet mares. The situation with Ron Winchell, I keep bringing this up. Ron Winchell has a phalanx, of course, of Tappet mares. He's got Tappet fillies and mares that are running. He's going to retain the best of them and keep breeding them to Gunrunner. It's scary what Ron Winchell has got at his disposal. And, oh, by the way, he owns Epicenter. It's unbelievable. And, you know, with all the work that his father, the late Vern Winchell, the Donut King, all the work that he put in. And Tappet, of course, was the last horse that Vern Winchell, you know, prominent horse that Vern Winchell owned before he passed. So he's the link between Vern and Ron. And I just, you're just going to see a production line of horses like this out of the Winchell camp and in Asmussen and Scott Blasey's hands. Part of the story, by the way, we don't have word yet. Joel Rosario lost some significant mounts yesterday.
Ill at the start of the day, more ill after the day was done. Oof, well, that'd be tough to look at those results.
I checked with Ron Anderson early this morning. They're hoping that he'll be able to go today, but they're just going to see how he feels.
And he tested negative for COVID.
Yeah. I whatever's going on, he needs to get back. I mean, to lose Haughty and to lose this horse. I mean, it is also on the same token. I do like that Rosario and now Ricardo Santana. Every time Ricardo gets a mount now for Asmussen, it just, you know, puts another dart into the, you know, the whole, they'll never ride him again. After Rosario's ride here, he's going to lose the calls. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just stop with that. Yeah. It's a business, folks. And jocks are not machines.
Whereas social media is something of a machine. A crazy machine.
The spewing of venom is unending.
And just before, we got to get to your play of the day, but before we do that, wanted to pull up one we talked about on Handicapper Support earlier, one from last night our time out at Del Mar. Graham Motion sends Spenderella out for the grade one Del Mar Oaks, and she's going to be number 11 horse here. This is some performance by her. Went off at 6-5 in a field of 13 and just kind of laughs at him. Tyler Gaffleone out for the ride.
She's sitting third here, and she made 6-5 look like an absolute gift. And Bella Bell, who I was excited about, and I made the Beat Bic NHC contest play. Beat Bic running second here, best we can do. Spenderella comes back from Royal Ascot, and basically, you know, not that there's a three-year-old filly eclipse. There is the New York Bred Award. Right, so she's probably the three-year-old New York bred of the year, but this is a great effort, and it really, I tweeted last night as we were going to bed, that was a beautiful counterbalance to Nest's performance. You had the best two three-year-old fillies on dirt and on turf, and they both go off at short odds, and they both absolutely live up to expectation. It doesn't happen all that often, so that's probably to me coming out of this Saturday and out of these last few days. Thank goodness for the high quality racing on the actual racetrack, because the off the racetrack news and you know. Spinning top is completely unpleasant. And just, you know, just sort of debilitating and disheartening.
I'll toss out one more before we send it to your play of the day. Out of FanDuel Sportsbook, Rattle and Roll got it done in the St. Louis Derby.
Kenny McPeak and Rattle and Roll, yeah, that was, haven't got a figure on that. And we should mention, if we're doing a couple of little pieces of of recapping. Uriah St. Louis.
Oh, there it is.
Look at this. Let's go out to East St. Louis. What's the town? Collinsville.
Yeah, I think you're right. The old Fairmont Park. Rattle and Roll is number 5 horse. War Campaign number 8. Brigadier General for
Holy
Dallas Stewart and West Point runs
truck?
Third, the number 2.
The truck is just churning it out.
They're on their game there in the booth.
McPeak's going to win this. I'm going to mention Uriah St. Louis at Monmouth yesterday with a $35 winner, of course, because every time Uriah wins, this is informative with Dexter Haddock. Some people, you might not like fish, but everybody loves Haddock. Dexter Haddock.
Haddock.
Buddy, hey now.
Rattle and Roll, kind of validating what he was promising last year, but gets it done here in the St. Louis Derby.
Yeah, nice performance.
And once again, just remind people today, Queen's Plate, Moira, the filly, looks pretty good against the boys up there in the Queen's Plate today. All right, let's end it to your play today before we go to a commercial. Toss out something for the good folks. A clever idea.
Clever idea. My clever ideas are on the off day when we're not doing, it seems, the DePaul play of the day. It's just crazy. I cannot seem to get anything going. I heard you mentioning in the feature today, Dance Macabre. And I thought this was a funny card. And there actually is a horse in the first race, Grand Motion, in that 2-year-old filly race. Take a long look at Positive Message, the 2-horse, 10-1. Almost was my play, but I hate making first-time starters and the 2-year-olds. You don't make those plays of the day. Dance Macabre, however, is 5-1. And off that maiden win with the move to turf, this happens to be a horse that Vinny Viola bred with one of his covers that he has left from Army Mule. And, of course, Army Mule standing for a bargain price at Hillendale. And that win down at Colonial, and also the fact that it's Kelsey Danner, I think kind of obscures Dance Macabre. But that's as good a performance as anybody owns in this group. And feels like one that doesn't have to have the lead. It's got the sort of open air outside trip that we love, the Marty McGee. And Dance Macabre at 5-1 felt like a ideal DePaula play of the day. Let's get one here. And
I'll also toss out, just from a handicapping angle, the horse like that, people these days rely on, as do I, it's an important tool in my toolbox, the buyer figures. And when you get these races that don't generate a figure,
I think
horses tend to get overlooked a little bit by the betting public these days. So you have to go back to old school handicapping and really take a look at the race and the times and whatnot. I think you can find some value in situations like that.
Well, as it happens, that race, when it comes to the sheet figures, Thoroughgraph, that's what, when I said that performance measures up from a sheet perspective, from that angle, absolutely works. So with a 10. And I think she's fast enough, and it felt like a value. I also considered Tommy Albertrani in the nightcap at 5-1, that Empress Theodora. What'd you do in the 10?
I used vagaries, but I said I don't think that horse is invincible by any means, and I had Empress Theodora in the third spot.
Belshaza for Gary, too. I know Rosario wanted that ride back on Belshaza last time, and I would absolutely include her in any exotic plays.
Sounds good. All right, let's take a break. Travis Stone will join us a little bit later on. Wayne Catalano. We continue on a Sunday morning, Loose on the Lead. Stay tuned.
When you think trucks, think DePaula.
Save this week. Drive Silverado, just $369 a month. Yes, $369 a month.
Then come join the family for value. Just visit, call, or click. So come join the family and think DePaula for all your automotive needs.
It only takes one upset to make history, and now you can be part of Saratoga's long tradition at the Dark Horse Mercantile. The Dark Horse Mercantile offers a carefully curated selection of clothing, gifts, and home decor, from one-of-a-kind vintage racing memorabilia to select brands like Barber and Under Armour, as well as exclusive Dark Horse branded merchandise. So celebrate the Dark Horse in all of us at the Dark Horse Mercantile, downtown Saratoga, where the smart bet is always the Dark Horse.
When you think trucks, think DePaula.
Save this week and drive any new Chevy like Equinox with zero down payment, zero first payment, and zero security.
Then come join the family for value. Just visit, call, or click. So come join the family and think DePaula for all your automotive needs.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Baal. These two are travels head-to-head with Joe Hart very dominant. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
We're back on Loose on the Lead on this gorgeous Sunday morning, coming in after Alabama and coming back to the spa like a swan to cap a what? Not a swan. What are they? The swallows. Like the swallows to cap a swan.
Now I've got one. Now
seriously. You're gonna trip me up on a swan to Capistrano versus the swallows?
Well, the parakeet in the cage. And, I think I got one now.
Canary in a coal mine. Yeah, okay.
Parakeet, canary, come on.
That's what he said.
I think that's swan to swallow. I think I'm right down.
All right, we'll let the public decide. It's great to get Travis Stone back in New York. Had to run home to Louisville to do a one-day cameo. You've called it. Now you've called an Arlington Million and a Beverly D.
Yeah.
And you put that off the list. Good morning.
How are we doing?
Excellent.
Thanks. Had a good weekend. I don't know if you guys do this much. We went to see Bill Burr back last night.
Oh, cool.
Now, it was warm. This year was warm.
Cool.
But it was 25,000 people there. Sort of an underrated aspect of this town and the events that they have there. It was a nice time, obviously, after a good Alabama.
Yeah.
I've gotten caught in traffic like five times this summer.
Probably why.
And I remember when I was a kid, I don't think there were big traffic jams on the way in, on the way out of a concert. Obviously, everybody leaves at the same time. So I'm wondering if they changed up the parking.
I think they
somehow
have. They have the traffic flow. But, you know, every year they got to tinker with something.
It's like
the Derby. They tinker with traffic flow every year.
Every year.
Every year it gets more and more stressful getting in.
But you're right. That's something I barely, if ever, mention for folks who maybe are watching now via YouTube and you're planning to come up to the track, you know, this year or any other. Check out the spec schedule while you're up here and make it have a day at the track and go over to catch a nice concert.
We've had a nice time there. Six or seven times we've gone over. It's been fun.
Growing up, what concerts did you go down for?
Oh, this is awful. My first concert in high school was Britney Spears at spec.
Oh, we'll be using that on radio next time. That's tremendous.
Yeah, I just sold myself.
That's tremendous. That was
the one. Several others. My dad was a big SPAC, and he grew up in Lake Luzerne, like 30 minutes away from there. He went SPAC all the time, but I picked it up more recently. I've enjoyed it this summer, a few more to go, so it'll be fun.
Seth?
My big one that I used to like to go to, and he was here every summer, is James Taylor.
James Taylor. The Allman Brothers would come.
Beach Boys, when I was a kid, Beach Boys was always a big concert out there when the Beach Boys were still kind of the Beach Boys. Chicago, they would do a Beach Boys Chicago double.
When I was at Colgate, I stayed one summer. Actually, I stayed two summers, but one summer, and a group of us came for the Almonds. And you could bring stuff in. You could bring coolers in back then. And we would vodka up a watermelon two days ahead of time.
Ooh.
Oh. You bring in that vodka watermelon. The greatest. We had so much fun. We used to go to the jazz festival, too. The Newport and the cool jazz festival?
They do the jazz festival out here.
Now it's Fryhofer, right? Fryhofer, I think now. But the old Newport and cool jazz festival saw great acts. Emmylou Harris here. Emmylou Harris.
Yeah.
Many times.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Fun.
Some thoughts? You and I were talking about the summer.
Yeah, I mean, it's been... And the vibe is a little bit different up here ever since the meet got extended a little bit. I don't feel like there's as much of a rush to handicap every card for whatever reason it is. So I've sort of tried to, I don't want to say parse my plays a little bit, but temper the plays every day. And it's been, I feel like I've had really good opinions. I just have not connected the right way. Even yesterday, as an example, I can't remember the name of the horse, but the 1-1-A entry for Rapoli that ran down that loose and the lead, Dr. Butte, was it?
Or Dr. Bloom.
Bloom or whatever it was.
Bloom. Yeah, Bloom.
Yeah. There was an opinion that I just didn't quite connect on. So we were talking to some friends yesterday at the track. I says, you just got to trust the process and keep on going. And you still
that was
got
a pretty good opinion, though. That was a head bob at the wire.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. My ADW account says otherwise.
because that's you're counting money at the eighth hole. You're thinking, oh, my God, we're going to get home here. And then Johnny motivates the last 100 yards.
Yeah. Well, it's just challenging, but that's part of it up here. It's hard to win. A lot of people have been commentating on, certain trainers or jockeys not having good beats. Tyler, who absolutely dominates Kentucky, it's hard to come up here and find a slipstream of winners all the time. There's so many good riders, and it's just tough. It's tough for everybody.
What adjustments have you made? Because I've never had a meet like this. Two disqualifications costing a pick four, pick five for, when I tell you, combined close to 4,000, and I'm not a guy that squawks about getting losing that way, photos okay, but it's been uncanny actually that no big 1,500, 2,500, the kind of pick four, pick five hits that you need every couple of weeks to augment whatever else you're doing in terms of individual horses. Have you adjusted and scaled back? I'm curious because you're big. You're a very big multi-ticket player, and you've got the syndicate that you had up.
Yeah. So I think my adjustments have been, I've studied a little bit over winning plays and what the strategy and the approaches were. And inevitably, it comes down to when you connect and you connect big on a race. You were smart. You were smart on that race. You were smart on that day, and you have to press that opinion. It is hard to be smart. Yeah. 5-6 times a day, maybe even 5-6 times a week. So one thing I've tried to do is, as an example in yesterday's Alabama, I thought Secret Oath was sitting on two things. One, she was going to take a big step forward, or she was going to, sort of regress to the moon. She did sort of in the middle, sort of ran her race. I was wrong. So I basically lost every superfecta I played. I like the one and the two underneath third and fourth. There's an example of where I was committed to the opinion. If right, it's a score, right? You set yourself up for Travers Week and beyond. So it's more about trying to find that focus. And when I don't like a horse, they're out. Because when I win, or even when my friends win, they were against somebody and it wasn't there. And you were just smart and right on that day.
Yeah, I've said that to people over time, and it maybe takes a while to learn that for a new handicapper. I like the baby races a lot, and you'll get prices that float up. And some people think, well, it floats up, so now I can bet a little less and still make it. And I'm like, if it floats up, I'm betting more because I have an opinion. Let me be right with the opinion. I'm going to, jump into the juicy odds.
Yeah. So you have to. You can't play scared. I think maybe that's the undercurrent in this whole conversation. You can't play scared. You can't start to build additional tries and supers with the 4-to-1 you don't like because you just start to erode your bankroll. It's a hard game enough as is with takeout. You can't add more to it.
What's your policy and approach or opinion when it comes to the higher denomination rifle ticket? That maybe 2x1x2x1x2. And hitting it 20 times. I was sitting with Blue yesterday with Leon Blushewitz, and Blue in the race in that crazy four horse the maiden race, the four horse turf maiden going long that McPeak ends up winning. This is perfect. I put McPeak in the picks. I had McPeak fourth. Had Shug, had Chad, had who was the other one? And so I've got everybody except the McPeak to cash to cash that pick five for somewhere between 450 and 700. And McPeak wins the photograph. If Blue gets Shug, if Shug wins that photograph at 7-to-1, he's got a $20 pick four. That's a nickel.
Yeah.
What is your, and I'm really, if you don't mind talking about the syndicate and the group, you guys have had an approach to the big multis for several years now. Talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I go back to one of my big days up here several years ago was when Practical Joke won the King's Bishop. Remember, he came up the rail. It was a great ride by Rosario. I had an opinion on that horse being a one-turn horse going back to the spring. And I ended a pick three on that. with a very hard punch. And I don't usually bet this big on pick threes, but it was like a 1 by 2 by 1, so it's obviously going to cost $2.
Right.
I bet it for 200. Boom, wow. Boom, boom. It was a score. And like that is the example of where that was an opinion, and I pressed it, and I went on with it. But it's hard to do. And if you're up here every day and you want to play in all these pick fives, next thing you know, when you start to put $90, $100, $200 tickets together, you're eroding your bankroll on those areas where you have that opinion that you can press, or you should press, I should say. Handicapping is the easy part. It's so true. The betting is so challenging. It's really
well,
tough.
And you make a great point that people should also remember. If you've handicapped the card, and I always recommend handicap the night before because so much is going on during the day, but you handicap the night before, and there's a horse you like in the seventh or the eighth race, don't blow the bankroll in races 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. You know, make sure you still have some bankroll left for the opinion you have later in the day.
That bankroll building, that's a fallacy. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Bankroll eroding should be the proper term there.
Well, and that particularly, we talk about that particularly for not just, you know, the Monday through Friday, Monday, whatever, Wednesday through Sunday, but particularly on big days, when you're talking about Breeders' Cup, you're talking about the Triple Crown season, next week, the Travers Day, you don't want to get to, you know, the meat of a big day and, you know, have blown 70% of what you thought you were going to have, because then you're going to suddenly, you know, you're going to adjust in the wrong direction. And you're going to make a mistake, and even if you hit, you're going to come away dissatisfied, especially if your opinion was accurate. There's nothing worse than cashing a ticket and being unhappy. So you got to have discipline. I mean, that's as much a part of this as any of the other elements, the handicapping side and the ticket building side.
I agree with that. It's so true. It's hard.
Yeah, it's very hard. Let's get some opinions on some of the racing so far. You know, you were down, obviously, calling the Kentucky Derby. Well, let me first ask the Kentucky Derby. Could you hear in your booth from people who were there, it seems like, and I was down at the race book, and we had a promotion, and my two are coming, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm kind of cashing my ticket, and then Rich Strike make the move. I've heard down there at Churchill the place kind of went silent. Did you get that feeling up in your booth?
My brain went silent. I've called a lot of races. That was by far, obviously it's a Derby, which is stressful to begin with. That was by far the most brutal 20 seconds of a race call ever. The quick spiel is, everybody knows we use silks to handicap. But when you see a horse who was never there and is all of a sudden there with what looks like a white two saddle cloth,
right,
you're like, whoa, Happy Jack? But then, no, those are red silks. And your brain goes Red Soaks, Rich Strike, 20, 21, outside. It just all happened so fast. I was not confident I called him right until I saw them put the numbers up. That was not fun. Because he was never there until he was there. It was wild. But yeah.
Well, he didn't make the T-shirt either.
No, he didn't make a lot of things. He made my flashcards, though, thank God. It was in the flashcards all week.
We should probably take a second, actually. And he's here. He's on the grounds. Mm-hmm. And he certainly, as Mike Welch wrote the other day, they watched him work, and Mike had a little tweet missive about, you know, how good he looked. And I saw him go to the paddock the other day when I was on radio on Wednesday, and saw a chance to see Eric Reed. The reality of his Derby win and you know, the improbability factor, it is absolutely limited to him not being part of any pre-race discussion, because if in fact anybody had known that he was going to be in that field, you would have had a very different discussion, and he would have absolutely been included in any conversation about late running exotic candidates. That anybody that had looked at what he had previously done it would have realized, well, if we get a collapse, you know, one of those crazy prices that could be third or fourth, I mean, not necessarily as a win candidate, but I mean, all we heard all week leading up was this has got a potential for a pace collapse. So if people had been really aware that he had potential to be involved, you would have had a different scenario, I think, with him.
I like to sort of look back at races. Obviously, I call that race, so I don't play it. And I went back and looked at his PPs. His maiden win at Churchill in the September meet, he skipped over that track. And a lot of horses do like Churchill. So it's not surprising that he handled that track well in the Derby. It was such a perfect storm of scenarios, though. And was one of the few times where I think, I mean, there was a bunch of Hall of Fame riders in that race. None of them had any idea how fast they were going.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember during the race, they put that opening quarter up. I stared at my TV where I get the times for what felt like forever. It was not forever, but it felt like forever because I was like, do I trust this time? Because they did not look like they were bunched. They looked like they were a turf field going by. I think for him, though, when you talk about the Travers, I was 100% against skipping the Preakness with him. I think you have to strike while the iron is hot. Agreed. You've got a horse that's in form. The Belmont was never going to be the spot for him. He's just sort of that slow, grindy type. And he's just always going to be up against it. If he were my horse, I'd be thinking about the Lucas Classic and the Clark and anything that runs over that Churchill Downs dirt track, because it's pretty obvious that he likes it there.
Yeah, agreed.
So what do you think about coming up in the Travers? You're going back to the Jim Dandy Epicenter, and I didn't hear if Chargett worked this morning
I think he's out. Oh, Dave Grinning tweeted it out, foot abscess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. But Epicenter with the win reestablished himself. I think a lot of people, even with the second place finishes, were still saying he's probably the best. And I think he kind of validated that in the Jim Dandy. So
I thought his Jim Dandy was awesome. I thought he had no business running him down like he did. He soundly beat Zandon again. So I'm not sure what Zandon's going to have to turn the tables on him. I'll say this about Epicenter and Steve Asmussen. I am just continuously amazed at his ability to develop these dirt horses and get them to not only be good early, but get better as a three-year-old and get better as the year progresses. I pulled up, and I'm not going to compare them, but I was comparing them, Gunrunner to Epicenter. And you could argue that Epicenter is farther along at this point in his career than Gunrunner was. You know, not saying Epicenter is going to become Gunrunner, but it's just sort of a testament to the fact that Steve knows how to develop these horses. And by all accounts, the barn, I believe, thinks he's doing better now than he was going into the Derby. I think he's going to win that Travers, and that I hope he puts on a show because I think he's that good. I think he's just a nice developing horse.
What did you think of the Asmussen 2-year-old yesterday? Echo again.
Well, I mean, obviously we all heard about it. I mean, there was the buzz of the week, right? And I thought he ran well.
It's been a month they've been talking about the horse.
Yeah, we heard about it way back at Churchill. I think one of the things that yesterday, so I like to sit in the grandstand here because I sit in the finish line everywhere else I work. So here, I'm in the grandstand. I like to see that it sort of removes the noise of being involved in the game. I'm a fan again. He runs by, and he actually looked like he was still sort of figuring it out. Like, you could just sort of see his head was doing a couple little things here or there. And so if he improves and gets better, like so many Steve horses do, look out. I was impressed. He ran well.
I mean, a 94 buyer for 2 years.
It's huge.
Phenomenal.
It's huge.
Yeah. And Nesh yesterday, thoughts there?
I tweeted it out, and this was an honest, I've watched thousands of races here. I have never heard the crowd make a discernible change in tone like when she kicked away at the eighth pole. It was noticeable, and everybody reacted to it. I guess the figure didn't come back super strong. Who knows what to make of that? 10 furlongs, probably not a distance she's going to have to run much more anyway. She was awesome. I think she's a cool horse. I was glad to see Secret Oath bounce back.
Yeah.
She sort of ran her same race. I'm not saying she like came up with this big, huge number, but you know, Wayne got a lot of flack for a few things over the past several weeks, and she showed up for him, and I was happy to see that, too.
Yeah, it was a nice performance from what I thought both of them.
Yeah.
And earlier in the meet, we had some nice performances as well. Anything stand out to you?
I'm very skeptical of Life Is Good getting 10 furlongs in a race that. You know, I was not as...
Let me ask you that performance, though. Because after the race, a lot of people weren't giving real credit, I thought, to the performance there. I thought it was a really good run by Life Is Good.
One of the things here at Saratoga, that run to the first turn is so quick. When your horse, like, I mean, he broke out of the gate like he had a rocket attached to him. He just never breaks anything but sharp. And when you get that position in that quick run of the first turn here, it's a big advantage. I think it's a bigger advantage than people tend to realize. And he sort of controlled things. He's very good. It's going to get a lot tougher for him
like,
going
to me,
forward.
It looked like maybe the group was going to swallow him up, though, at the top of the stretch. And then
he kicked on. He's good.
Down,
he's very good. Yeah. I just don't know about that 10th furlong when push comes to shove.
And everything points toward a brisk pace when we get to Keeneland for that. So,
I'll mention one other, because you guys were talking about it earlier. I am just so happy to see Michelle Lovell do well. Yeah. I was calling races at Louisiana Downs 2007. And I walked out of the track, and here's Michelle walking into the track. She was at Louisiana Downs, what is it, that 15 years ago. And now she's got a prominent stable in the Midwest, and now she's winning races at Saratoga. And she's got a small barn, but she is every bit as classy as she comes across. She's a lovely lady, and I'd love to see her do well.
Yeah, I had her on yesterday, and it was fun to talk to her. First start at Saratoga, and hey, why not a Grade Stakes?
Hey, good for her. Yeah.
And could have easily won that race yesterday, obviously, and be two for two. She's a hit everywhere she goes. Churchill, then Fairgrounds, then Colonial during the summer, and widely popular and deserves, you know, she doesn't want, I actually, you know, we talked to her last week after the two-year-old, after the special win, and she doesn't want divisions, you know, she's not looking to get, another 30 head over and above what she already handles. She wants to put her hands on every horse that runs under her name, and there's a lot to be said for that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, in terms of getting some premium stock, she's deserving of an owner that is spending, you know, freely or breeding, homebreds at a high level. And look what she's doing with, you know, kind of meat and potato types. She's single-handedly raised Gervin's profile for Ocala Stud with Damon's Mound, and the horse that she bred that co-owns and with Just Might and Change of Control, it's just been a terrific couple of years.
Yeah, it's awesome to see, and I really respect the. I don't need to grow this barn beyond one division. I a lot of respect for that.
I was saying earlier, it's always fun. We get trainers like Michelle Loveland, Ed Fieldbauer, and Will Morey on Friday. And it gives, because I think we get a lot of people watching during Saratoga who are kind of new to the game. And so it gives them, the face to the name in the program. You're a guy now, higher profile down at Churchill calling the races, but you're from right up here, a little north of Saratoga Springs. And so folks who aren't familiar, just give us the background and how you got into the game. I remember the days in the closet with the Saratoga Special, doing the internet radio show, calling races into a tape recorder. But talk about what drew you into the game and led you to Churchill Downs.
So I grew up an hour north, town called Scroon Lake, small town. My dad was a racing fan, and his dad was a racing fan, and we'd come down here all the time, come to the track. And at some point, it sort of flicked in me that I actually liked the race calling component more than some of the other aspects of it. And I wrote a letter to Tom Durkin when I was 12, asked him, what do you have to do to become a race caller? He wrote me back, and I was sort of on my way from there. Wrote with Sean and Joe for the Saratoga Special for a couple years. That was a real Saratoga intro. I was here every day for two summers during college, and sort of really got a taste for it. And then I was very fortunate. I graduated from Oneonta and on my way to Louisiana Downs, and Monmouth, Aqueduct, and Churchill all in one fell swoop, and here we are. And it's funny coming full circle to this set, because there's two things that I think were an underrated aspect of my developing love for the game. One was my dad is now a retired state trooper. And every day his station would get the newspapers from the city. But the delivery guy knew he was a racing fan and would always throw a racing form on top of the pile. So we had the racing form every single day in the house growing up, which, you're a kid and you're reading racing every day. That's one thing. And the other is Capital TV. I'd have it on all day long. My brother is 12 years younger than me, so rather than get a real job, I told my mom, I'll just stay home and watch him. Put the Capital OTB on in the background, racing on 24/7. It's so funny, like sitting on this set, you can hear the sort of the tractors run here or there, which is just, that is just so this show. Yeah. And it's like so the Saratoga experience, and you're like, you're really here, and you're a kid growing up, and you're like, man, it'd be cool to be a part of that, and now here we are. It's great.
It all does come full circle.
So you remember when Seth was clean shaven before he had he traded in
clean shaven and actual hair.
I can relate to that.
And talk about what it was like, given that background. What was it like to be up in the booth for your first Kentucky Derby? That had to be.
I'd never been to the Derby, so I.
You had never been to the
I'd
Derby.
Never
you
been
called
to the Derby.
It?
Yes. Yeah. So my first Derby was I was going to call it, and Nick Tamaro, you guys know, good friend of mine. He's like, hey, I want to go too. So next, we get him a press pass, and he was up there with me, and we got through it. It was awesome, but it was quite the experience. Obviously, it was American Pharoah, right? But the whole experience is top to bottom, and they get a little bit more stressful the older I get because I put a lot of pressure on myself to do well. So you always want to try and improve on things, but it's still a wild experience.
When you bring up American Pharoah, it leads me to ask what might be a difficult question to answer. It's not any news or revelation that these booths at Aqueduct Belmont and Saratoga, for the longest time, had been your goal. Getting the job at Churchill, it also feels like you've also got yourself in a position that is, you know, every bit the equivalent of a pinnacle job. How is your attitude about any change going forward? I mean, it just feels to me, watching you and knowing you now probably 15 years, mm-hmm. that you're quite content and quite pleased to be where you are, and that there isn't necessarily anything above and beyond what you already have achieved.
So for me, there was a 10-year effort to just try and make moves in the game and make progress. And I realized at some point that, A, you know, life is indeed short, and that the endless pursuit and the endless stressing over the next big thing was counterproductive to doing a good job as is. So I am content. I do love Churchill. I do love Kentucky. If somebody knocked on the door and said, would you want to call it Saratoga? I don't know what my reaction would be. It would be very tough to say no to that. Yeah.
Travis Stone, race caller down at Churchill Downs, local guy as well. I'd like to hear the background story. Capital OTV in the background.
I appreciate all the support over the years, too. It's been great.
Absolutely. Wayne Catalano is in the house, so we'll take a break. We'll come back with Catman in just a few. So stay tuned. Loose on the Lead continues. Thanks for stopping by.
Anytime.
Stay tuned.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTV.com.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as Serious Horse Players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTV. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a Serious Horse Player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTV.
Winning starts here.
We're back on Loose on the Lead. Thanks to Travis Stone for a great visit. And thanks to one of the great dancers, one of the great cooks, one of the great jockeys, one of the great trainers in the game's history, Wayne Catalano, the Catman, joins us. Good morning.
Thanks, Steve, for all the compliments. I appreciate that.
Right? That's your full resume.
Well, we got some. We've been blessed, after 50 years, we got a lot of it.
I see food on Twitter. I don't see the dancing. Is there dancing?
Oh, we know about the dancing from Tony Black. Tony Black tells us he's a terror on the dance floor.
Well, we used to do a few steps back in the day.
Back when you and Tony were running wild?
Oh, yeah. Me and Tony Black go back a long ways.
You were riding for Jack, right? He was riding for Jack, too.
Yeah, it was nice seeing him the other day in Chicago. Not Chicago, but where was that down?
Where was that? It was at Canterbury. No? Where was it?
No,
the
no,
Jockeys
no.
and Jeans.
Yeah, it was pretty good, though. I don't know where we seen him. Churchill, maybe?
Churchill, yeah, that could be. That could be. Give us a quick survey, because you got the group at Ellis that are running this summer. Have you zipped out there, or are you pretty much?
We was there. No, I shipped. We at Churchill. We just shipped from Churchill and Keelan to Ellis,
right,
in Indiana. We just based there in Louisville, and we got year-round stable at Keelan, so we shipped from there.
I always ask about the maidens, because the two-year-olds, that program at Ellis has produced a lot of nice horses. I mean, obviously, you got a little bigger purse opportunities here, probably some ownership potential if there's an owner you know is going to be here. How do you break up which ones stay there and which ones come to New York?
Well, Mr. Bob and Coffee Pot Stable live here, and we bring a few horses for them down here. And we got a couple that, you know, horses that fit the run in this, like we're going to run on the 31st, and the winner is. So there's a couple of races and a couple of owners, like you said. There's a couple of reasons why we come here, besides this great racing and great weather.
When did you first start coming to Saratoga?
Oh, I don't know. I came here, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years ago. I don't know. We went with Stephanie's Kitten and a couple of...
That's right. There you go.
So, did you ride here?
I did not.
1,500 wins.
Now, they'll keep saying 50. It's 1,792.
Holy cow. So, wait a minute.
Everybody
so there's
says
a mistake?
1,500 wins.
Well, that's what... That's, well,
2,000... No, it's 1,792.
1,792. So where are those 250? Where are they hiding them?
No. It's 2,951 is a trainer. We're trying to get to 3,000, which we've been fighting to get
there.
You're
40 plus away, and I was going to say, we think before the end of the year or no? A little bit into next year.
We better get to running some winners if we're going to do that. But, we've just been a little light on the old horses. We've got a couple of young horses that are, showing some promise and everything. But the everyday horses, we don't have them right now. But hopefully some of them will make themselves everyday horses, and some will make good horses.
Where are you stabled here? This side or over on the
I'm
other
on the
side?
Other side, 54, right between Chad Brown and Todd Fletcher.
You like it over there?
Right in the middle there. No, it's a good spot. You can get to both tracks real
easy.
Yeah,
real easy.
Yeah, we can get them both.
How many horses do you have in town?
We have a half a dozen. We had like 8 or 9. We sent a few back. And we've been lucky enough to have a few young horses. We went a first-time starter at Keelan, which is going to run in the stake here at the end of the month. And the winner is, he went first time out at Keelan. And Dive Master went first time out at Churchill, so we had one here that's running today.
Yeah, let's talk about the one today, yeah. Bolton Landing, Aztec Knights, by Sharp Azteca, who is coming to be a sneaky good sire, win early types, and this one won in the debut back on August 5th. I'm just curious, you won on August 5th, and was the game plan coming out of that race just you immediately took a look at the stake?
Well, she's doing really good. She ran a nice race, and we here, and she liked the surface. Why not take a shot? They got to line them up. It's been known that Graveyard a champion, so let's take a shot at it.
No, I mean, she looked very good in that career debut, certainly. Fired a buyer figure that matches up nicely with the group. What did you know going in that you had one that had the potential to fire first time out?
She was training very well. We was very happy with the way she was training. Sarah done a great job with her at Keelan, and she was showing a lot of potential there. And they had that, special race where, auction race. And it was on the grass, and all these horses have been running really, really good on the grass. So we took a shot, and she, like I told Ron Anderson, put Johnny on us. I really like this filly, so we took them out. And she got lucky, and everything went our way.
Yeah.
She ran a big race.
We think of Waino as a character around the game. You're training for as big a character as there is. Jerry Karum, Is how much fun is Jerry?
Jerry's a lot of fun. Yeah, he's you know, he likes the game, and you know, he likes to bet a few dollars here and there, and you know, he enjoys it. He's having a lot of fun, so that's always a good thing, you know.
Has he gotten you up in the airplane?
I've been in there one time. Me and Jenny flew from one track to another, and it was a nice time.
Jerry flies his own plane, and I don't know if I'd get in an airplane with Jerry Carolla. he's as wild as a character. Lives right on Lake Hamilton at Oak Lawn. Lives right there at Hot Springs, right on the lake. He's developing that hill, huh? That do you see what he's doing there?
He bought that. Yeah, he bought that
piece of property
so
there.
He's going to do something with it.
Yeah. He's talking about God knows what he'll do. Let me ask you a question about that. What was your thought? Where'd you shake out on this 3 day a week, December to May at Oak Lawn? Because I know a lot of the horsemen were sitting on their hands 4 days and were a little. I know they're tightening it up a tiny bit, but what was your thoughts?
At Oak Lawn, they're always doing something. You know, it's a great race town, and, you know, people love to go to the races there. They got a lot of money, so, you know, whatever they're doing, they're doing it right, you know, so I'm just going to go on with it. So.
You didn't mind, were you going back and forth from Fairgrounds?
When I was there, yeah, I did. I didn't have none of that last year, but we're going to go back this year.
Oh, good.
Have some horses.
Excellent. Aztec Knights, the Sharp Azteca, and out of the War Chant Mare, which ties into the turf. Who picked this horse out?
You know, Jerry Caroom has some friends that mentioned the horse to him. And he bought the horse. You know, she was working really good, so I was happy with her.
Nice.
Yeah, I think they did a good job.
OBS April this year, the 45,000.
Yeah,
it's a nice spot.
Like it might be a bargain, right?
Wow. Well, all the Sharp Aztecas are turning out to be bargains. It's unbelievable. I mean, he's up to 13 winners so far, and most of them are in the $30,000 to $75,000 range.
Yeah. Well, you know, that stallion is, you know, he's starting to show that he can overcome, you know, everything that he's been talked about. So, you know, the rest could be history the way they're running.
Unbelievable.
So.
You started out as a jockey. How'd you get into the game?
Well, when I was in New Orleans, I was like a young boy, not doing good in school. My uncle said, why don't you take him to the track to be a jockey? He said, no, Jack Bamberg. So it took me and my brother to the racetrack at Fairgrounds 50 years ago. And we started on with Jack, and you know, Jack teaches you hard work, and he gives you a good lesson on horsemanship, so I was very fortunate there to get started with a legend like Jack Bamberg.
I hear the story a little different.
Okay, how I got to the track? I just told you I wasn't doing good.
Forget school. He's running bets. You were running wild. And your brother was already getting started, right? And,
yeah, that was afterwards, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't 16 yet.
No, you were like how old? Like 13, 14, 15. 15.
I was 15.
15.
So I had to wait till I was 16. So I was sneaking around till I was 16.
Yeah.
And that's how that went down. Running around with Lonnie Ray and Terry Bonds and the crew. So. Racetrack, Rosita, all them people out there is like, you know, it's very different.
You saw, and you, what's interesting, Wayne, is how you kind of bridge that, you know, that era, you know, the end of an era, and you were young enough, you know, to be there for that, and some places that are gone, obviously, you know, DRC and Hazel and Nick Sarban and et cetera. The one that burnt in New Orleans, and then you transition between being a rider into the training side. I mean, your career is really amazing, actually, when you think about it.
Well, thank you, Steve. Well, we had a good run, and you know, we had a lot of great opportunities. With you know, we had a lot of good people working for us, and you know, you got to have the horses, and then you got to have the people, and you get the clients who give you good horses, and the rest has got to be, you know, you can work and stay doing that, or you can fall off, you know. But you get a great opportunity, and you take advantage of it and work at it, and the results will show.
One thing that really is a testament to, you know, to your abilities, you've had some ups and downs with owners. you've worked for a couple of very volatile owners along the way, in Frank Calabrese and in Ken Ramsey, and when they've gone in different directions, you've kept going forward and you kept picking up new and different kinds of owners and gone on with them. And in a lot of cases, when people lose a big principal, it that can be the end of their career, really. And you have found your way. Other owners have come to you, and you've gone on with it. It's really admirable on that front.
Thank you. Yes, Steve. Once again, like I said, we worked very hard at it. We had some great opportunities, and we were fortunate enough to get some people to come our way and give us opportunities like we had, and we were lucky with them. And I had a great teacher once again in Jack Vanbrugh, and I applied that to the hard work and the knowledge and the stuff that I learned through the 50 years of doing this.
When you decided to transition and start to train, who gave you horses to get going?
Well, I was a jockey, obviously, at the end of my career. My knee was a little swollen. I had some fluid on it. I had some time off. And I ended up with one horse training, and I just stayed training. I never went back to riding. And Vanbrugh gave me some horses, and, he hooked me up with John Franks, who was, like, the biggest owner in the country.
Sure.
So I had an opportunity from the beginning. I was leading training with John Franks, and, when he gave me them horses, we did good. And then it just snowballed from there.
Unbelievable.
Do you remember your first win?
I do. May 20th, 1974. Churchill Downs.
Nice. Who rode?
No, I rode that one. My first win.
You rode your
training. That, no.
Your first.
As a jockey.
Yeah.
It was May 20th, 1974. 74.
But
my first training was 83 at Arlington Park.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's the, I have asked you this. We discussed it as things were falling apart, but the situation at Arlington has to be just heartbreaking.
Yeah, I don't talk about it much because I want to cry. It was like unbelievable place. I mean, it's paradise. If anybody's ever been there, it's probably one of the prettiest tracks in the country.
In the world.
If not the prettiest.
In the world.
Yeah, I would say right up there, Like I always say, I might not be the best, but I'm in the top two. So Arlington might not be the best, but it's in the top
there
two.
You go. There you
that's
go.
What I just kid around with. But yeah, that's what I would say about Arlington.
Wayne Catalano with us, and I did get a question. Clocker John wants to know, is Bobby Flay going to answer your challenge this summer?
I talked to Bobby Flay. He says, I can't mess with that New Orleans cooking. That was his response. I said, they want us to have a contest.
You need Siaka to just drive you right into Bobby's kitchen, walk you right in, and just throw down.
That John the Clocker can cook himself.
Yes, he can. Absolutely.
I've been a couple of his dinners, and he does a great job.
Absolutely.
He likes to tease me all the time on Twitter about my cooking, but he cooks himself very good. So.
I love it.
Yeah. Do you have a specialty?
Not really. I cook anything. I can cook anything. You give me a recipe, we'll cook it.
Do you get to cook a lot when you're up here? Because the social season and, the days are so long.
I cook a lot here because, I'm by myself. And my wife comes up for my birthday, and, we had a couple of visits. But I don't go to the restaurants that much. And not a lot of clients are here, go out with. So I've been cooking at home. Get done late, tired, I just go home, cook up something. Sometimes I put it on Twitter, sometimes I don't. I had so many dishes over and over, so I try to wait till I get a new one or something good.
You're big with the pork chops, right?
I like pork chops.
You're a pork chop guy.
Yeah, I cooked one yesterday. That's on Twitter. I got two versions, one before I cut it up and one when I star fried it up.
I love it.
Make a little applesauce with that, a little pork chops and applesauce.
Yeah, it was actually great.
How about this Gormley-esque today?
Gormley-esque is a scratch.
Oh, you scratch it?
She got hurt. She got loose on the track yesterday.
Oh, Jesus.
Luckily, she might have dodged a big bullet, but she hit the fence, dropped the rider. I don't know, she hit another horse. And she run right into the fence, and she hit a few staples here and there, but overall I think she might dodge the
bullet. All right, we'll watch for her. She also was OBS April for Phoenix?
New Phoenix, Gary Drake and the crew, the very nice guy. Yeah, him and his wife Kitty, and they're good people. And Tom is a partnership with him, and they're very good people.
And then what about the maiden claimer today?
She's
Del Munia?
She should win.
She should win?
I thought she should have won a few times. I'd like to get it on the dirt, but I can't get her on the dirt, so...
This is a.
She got a lot better last time.
That's at Ellis, folks. If you're watching for this one, this is in the fifth race at Ellis.
Yeah, we won one the other day. Like my good friend, call me Catazone. We went with Eye of the Cat over at Ellis. He's a personal friend of mine.
Nice.
We run a horse farm, so it was exciting for him and the crew to win one for him. He really loves his horses.
That's great.
And he's my friend. So.
You got the winter is coming up a little bit later, right?
And the winter is, yeah. I got in the winter is on the end of the month that we're really excited about running. We think he could be a potential Breeders' Cup horse if he can get the job done like he's supposed to here. We're taking him on the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, nice. All right.
We got the French horse on the 28th, Colosso. He should be very well, too. Second time out in this country.
Excellent.
So, good to go.
Who brought that horse in?
I got it for some people, Al and John, and sent me a horse. And he got his first race over the track in this country, but I expect a big race out of him on the 28th.
Very good. All right, we're running late, but we appreciate the visit. Wayne Catalano, wish you a lot of good luck this afternoon with Aztec Knights.
Thank you. My pleasure, guys.
Appreciate it. And we'll wrap up another edition of Loose on the Lead for a Sunday morning. Seth Merrill and Steve Bick. A couple more Sundays left, so still plenty of fun to go, but hopefully you enjoyed this morning as well. Don't forget, great racing this afternoon. Weather, once again, very, very nice. If you want to come up to the racetrack, don't forget the Low Rollers over there. Always a lot of fun. Thursdays and Sundays, go by the 4-Star Day Bar, and you can enter that. Or swing down to the race book, fire up your Capital OTB bet account, but enjoy the races this afternoon here on the network as well. As far as the programming, morning programming, we'll be back Wednesday for more 9 a.m. handicapper support, 10 a.m. Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.